So I've got to ask, Lisa, I know you've done documentaries in the past that have been maybe not similar in nature, but definitely have revolved around southern states and similar subjects. But I'm curious, how did you and Jeff get connected to these two families in this story and Brooks County?
Well, we actually had been filming for 2 years when we met the Romans. We had created a website. It was just kind of a very simple website for the film. And the Romans found it online. They were typing missing in Brooks County, something like that, which is the name of our film. And they came upon our website, and Michelle, who is the sister-in-law of Omera Roman, who went missing, she emailed us and she said, "I found your website. I'm wondering if you could help us in any way." And we responded, "Well, we're going to be in Texas next week. Why don't we meet while we're there?" So we met the siblings all. We met them at a Starbucks. And we knew right away after we had been filming with other families at that point. But I think as soon as we met the Romans and talked about their story, and they seemed very interested in telling their story, the next day we just started filming with them, and then it just sort of went from there. So it was, we were 2 years into filming, actually. Is that right? Maybe a year and a half. A year and a half when we met them. But that's how we met them. And the other main story in the film is Juan. And we were in Brooks County filming something else, which, you get there and you never know what you're going to get when you arrive in Brooks County. So what we were filming that trip, it didn't pan out. And so, whenever things aren't working, we just kind of go and see what's happening at the South Texas Human Rights Center, and that's what we did. And we show up, and there is Moises, the cousin of Juan, there to talk with Eddie about his missing cousin. So Eddie's like, "Oh, hey, meet Moises. He's here." And so we just start filming, basically. Moises agreed to participate. And we just started filming and spending time with Moises in that week, actually. I think it was not an easy thing for him to be there alone during all of this. And so we just sort of spent some time with him in that week, not filming too. But so that's sort of how we met those two different families. Again, as I said, we had actually been filming with other families, but with these kinds of very sensitive topics, you never know. Like, you start filming, and then you start to feel like, well, these family might not be ready to tell their story, or this might, the filming, it seems like maybe it's not healthy for them. You kind of gauge, like, is this a good thing or a bad thing for them as you go. And with one of the families we were filming with, I think we ultimately decided this wasn't a good thing for them. And so we stopped filming that story, even though it was a very good story. So we just sort of lucked out. Well, it's a matter of sort of sticking around and being there a lot. We went to Brooks County 15 times over the course of 4.5 years. So when you're there long enough, you meet the right people. I think that's true of any documentaries. You really have to put in the time.
I'm curious to expand it to the other kind of people in the situation, and in those 4 years, meeting people like Eddie, Dr. Spradley, and then I'd love to hear about meeting the different ranchers, and we do get that perspective, which was very enlightening, from a very different perspective, sadly, of how they look at the situation. Can you talk about meeting so many different characters and members of Brooks County?
Yeah. Well, so we ended up first going to Brooks County with another forensic scientist, someone who's not featured in the film. And on that first trip, she introduced us to a rancher, not Mike Vickers, but another rancher who's in the film very briefly, LaBosier Durham. And to the sheriff of Brooks County, and to Eddie, and a couple of other people. And, you know, we, it's a process establishing relationships with people when you're making films. And so, you know, because we don't live in Brooks County, we had to really, you know, spend a lot of time. And each time we went back, you know, sort of reestablishing the relationships and continuing to kind of, you know, grow these relationships, like with Eddie, for example. You know, in terms of meeting the ranchers, I mean, we met LaVosier on that first trip, and so that was our first introduction, really, to, he's not a ranch owner, but a ranch manager. And so that was a whole new world for us to learn about, you know, and he's not really very much in the film, you know, ultimately we shot a lot with him, but it didn't really make it into the film. But we probably, the second time we went to Brooks County, we called up Mike Vickers because we had heard about him, from Benny Martinez, the sheriff. He actually suggested we call Mike Vickers, and other people had too. So we did, and we met him for the first shoot we did with him and interviewed him. And then the next trip, we called him up back again, and we said, hey, you know, we can do some more filming with you. And he said, well, he's a very busy man, so, you know, he always tries to fit us in when we're there, and sometimes he does, is able to, and sometimes he's not, but... you know, so we filmed with him a number of times. We kept asking, you know, can we go out with on an operation with the Texas Border Volunteers? And he kept saying, I need to talk to the board. And, you know, each time we'd mention it again, and he'd say, you know, I need to talk to the board. And so we felt like, okay, we're going out on one of these operations. But 3 years in, finally we asked, and he said yes. So we went out. And, you know, all of it is a learning for us as well. So it's sort of like the way we are presenting things in the film is, in a way, the way we're experiencing them as we're learning about it, you know, for Jeff and I, the co-director and I. But, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, people asked, how did you get access to this rancher? And, you know, but he's... feels very confident in what he thinks and what he believes, and I think he wants to get his view out there. And so here we were, you know, asking if we could get his view out there. And so I think for him, he had no issue filming with us. I think the only issue is really we weren't CNN or 60 Minutes or, you know, so he didn't really understand what an independent documentary would be, you know. And so I think for a lot of people in Brooks County, they're used to having journalists come and go, you know, for a day or two, but we had to kind of really explain to them what it is we were trying to do, which was like not do a quick story, but really like spend time in Brooks County and really kind of dive deep into what's going on there.
Can you talk a bit about kind of the outside of Brooks County, the perspective of what people had? Because I live in Texas, and honestly, I'd always assumed that the deadly routes were in Arizona. I never even knew or was aware of just how treacherous it became in the 90s with the legislation change. But can you talk a bit about just kind of maybe how unaware people are outside of southern Texas to what is going on?
I 100% agree with what you're saying, because we know other people in Texas, and we would explain to them why we were coming to Texas to film, and they had no idea. So I would say that most people that we have spoken to outside of South Texas have no idea what's going on there. They don't know what's going on there the same way people across the U.S. don't know what's going on there, and that is because it's not visible. It's, you know, it makes it into the news once in a while, but I think these deaths are basically invisible. There aren't even people keeping keeping track of the numbers because it's impossible. Yes, there are Border Patrol numbers, but those are very low. And we know they're low because we've compared them to what the actual remains that sit in the, Pima County medical office in a given year versus the number that Border Patrol says for that given year. So they're not the same. So the Border Patrol numbers are very low, and also there are just so many people that go missing, so one will never know. And no one talks about it because people don't know about it. We didn't know what was going on in Brooks County until we got there, really. We didn't really have a sense of the how big the crisis was. And I think it's kind of purposeful that, we don't know what's going on there, because I think if people, and the reason why we made this film is if people really understood what was happening, people would be outraged, people would be horrified. I mean, I want to hope that people wouldn't be okay with this. And so it doesn't surprise me that you say that you didn't know what was going on. I think I live in Tucson, and people here know that migrants die in the desert here. There is a system here to deal with it. There's a medical examiner's office, and in that same building, there is an NGO called the Calibri Center for Human Rights, and they speak with the families of the missing, and so the two entities come together weekly and discuss cases and try to make identifications, and this is all happening within the same building. It's all paid for by the government. Brooks County is not on the border, and so there's no federal funding to deal with what's going on there, and there's no centralized system in Texas to deal with migrant deaths. So it's this whole other thing that's happening there. I mean, it shouldn't be happening, period. The migrant deaths should not be happening, but they are happening and have been happening for decades, and the way in which Texas is dealing with it, I mean, they're just doing the best they can. I'm not blaming any one particular person or organization, but it's really dysfunctional. And you see that in the film. You see some of it in the film. And it's because there's no system there to deal with this.
To kind of further that point, Lisa, I'd love to know, there's a moment in the film where we see Eddie scratching off one of the blue containers for water that says something to the long the lines of build the wall, or that's why we need a wall. And obviously in the current climate of rhetoric about the border, do you feel that this these sad issues of losing migrants is going to escalate, or is there any type of silver lining that maybe you've seen something recently that made you feel like there are being measures to help? Because just in watching the film, I felt a bit of dread about maybe this subject's just going to get worse.
Well, what was interesting to us was going to Brooks County after Donald Trump was elected. Actually, after his administration took office, people were asking us, so how has this affected your story? How is your story different? And of course, you don't really know until you spend a little time there to really understand how that development changes our story. But I think it was about 6 months into the Trump administration, we went to Brooks County to film. And the thing that was most striking to us was there were so many more Border Patrol trucks and agents around the checkpoint and around Falfurrias, the town. That was the thing that was most striking. So more militarization, basically, of that, what we think of sort of as the second border, that interior checkpoint is, in essence, the second border. So increased militarization, which is, you know, the wall is an example of that, but having Border Patrol driving around is another example of militarization. And so was that created by having more agents around the checkpoint is that the groups of migrants were being dropped off further south, and so their walk increased in length, and so it became more dangerous and more people were dying. The people that were coming, so the numbers of people coming across the border had gone down since Donald Trump was elected, since his administration took office. However, the percentage of people dying went up, because the more you make it, the more difficult you make the journey, the longer you make the journey, the more likely people are going to die. And so I think, you know, in terms of any kind of increase of militarization, it's going to cause an increase in deaths, and the problem is going to become worse. And the checkpoint, the interior checkpoint in South Urias, has actually grown since we started making the film. They did an expansion, and they put in a lot of money so they could actually have more lanes and more enforcement there. And they invested a lot of money. And I know, you know, part of that and spending a lot of time in that part of Texas, I realized for a lot of people there, you know, the feeling is that these are jobs. The more Border Patrol they have, the better, because it's opportunities for people to have good paying jobs. So, you know, it's complicated. I mean, of course, there are other kinds of jobs that can be created. We know that. But that is, you know, the thinking there is that, you know, it's a good thing.
To kind of wrap up, Lisa, and to get to something you mentioned at the very beginning, that one of the families found you online, with this film being released into film festivals right now, can you talk about the importance of having not just a film like this out, but, you know, awareness to the subject matter? And can you share with us how people can find out more information about your film and where it'll be seen? I think it's obviously a positive thing to hopefully help save lives.
Yeah, well, the film will air on Independent Lens, which is a PBS series, next fall, so fall 2021. And it will, until then, it will be playing at film festivals throughout the country. Most of them are virtual right now and streaming across the U.S. So the upside to having all of these film festivals virtual is that more people can watch the film from their homes. Which is great. What we want is for as many people to see the film as possible. So that's happening right now. And so the film will be at Doc NYC in mid-November, and it will be streaming across the U.S. for people to see, and then continue on to other festivals in the year, and then again broadcasting next fall. And then you know, millions of people will see the film, hopefully. And then, you know, for us, one of the most important things we need and want to do is have a very robust impact campaign for the film, and to work with, you know, an experienced impact producer and really get the film out there as widely as possible, and to get it in front of people that actually can, you know, make decisions and laws, so we can really look at this, you know, in a more serious way, that something needs to change, not just something, but everything needs to change. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we will have a new administration starting in January, and immigration reform can happen. And this whole part of the immigration story needs to be part of the conversation, that people are dying, that militarization of the border is causing this. This has been going on for decades, and a lot of Americans don't know about it. A lot of lawmakers probably don't even know about it or the extent of it. So I think for us, we want to just get the film out there as widely as possible, get it in front of the right people. And, you know, I am hopeful about the impact that the film can have. You know, I know that we are very committed to, doing what we can to sort of really start a meaningful conversation around all of this. I think it's time. I think, you know, 3 decades is enough time to learn that this is what this is doing. So, yeah, that's sort of where we're at in terms of getting the film out there. And what we hope to gain from it.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for taking the time to make this film, you and Jeff, and shining a light to a subject that obviously needs to be, like you said, known, and hopefully more and more people will see this and be inspired to help the cause. So thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you for taking the time to write about it. We really appreciate it.